each meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
Hey, welcome everyone. God bless you for tuning in. God bless you for tuning in to Brain Wrinkling Wednesday. That means Father Coise is with you here today. I promise to not make it hurt as I wrinkle your brain. Sometimes brain wrinkling is... Sometimes the brain wrinkling hurts. And I think a lot of our brains are being hurt in our present Catholic world. I debated with myself once again, do I talk about the topic du jour, or do I try to distract you and get off of it? I think it's more in keeping with what the Holy Spirit wants of us. We do and we should see a time, an important time for renovation, reformation, true repentance, true conversion—all these things can be associated with our present crisis, and so it is. I flock noted out. That's kind of like tweeting in my world. Flock noted. There's a nice little service called Flock Notes that I use through church, and if you get Flock Notes, you got a little dose of the theme today. If you don't get a Flock Note message from me, do please send me an email message, and I'll put you in my list of people who get that. It begins now. That's right, and it can begin sooner if you get my Flock Note. Remember my email comes from 1 Samuel chapter 8. Just from. That's not my email. The email is unlikeothernations@gmail.com. No spaces, unlikeothernations@gmail.com. Once again, because in the 8th chapter of 1 Samuel, we find that God wanted Israel to be unlike other nations, though Israel wanted to be like other nations. And it was in Israel's desire to be like other nations that God was disappointed. And a huge twist or a huge change in the relationship between the nation of Israel and their God occurred. God, in a certain sense, said, okay, you're not going to play along with my rules. You want to create a nation according to the rules that all sorts of other nations have made, going to kick me to the curb, as it were, then I'm going to have to up the ante and lay down the laws in different ways, shapes and forms. And
my one of those, Lord, that, such destruction.
That's the good voice of, it's not the Lord. He's calling on the Lord. He's pointing out the destruction. The destruction that comes when we ignore and we kick God to the curb. So we are here at the Winds of Change, dedicated to finding the God that is kicked to the curb and nurse him back to health and put him in his rightful place in the leading us down Main Street, as it were. Okay, how's that for mixing a lot of metaphors and all the rest? Anyways, whoa. Yeah, that's the way.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The first of many in this hour of brain wrinkling. I want to concentrate on three mistakes that I see are very easy to make. I see them being made quite often and by people I love and respect and admire. These subtle mistakes being made by people that I find myself in harmony with in so many ways. Yet these little mistakes need to be discovered and found out. If the problems of our society were not subtle, if the roots of the problem, the fruit of the problems are not subtle. The fruits of the problems of our society are things like the incredible rise in violent crimes, the incredible difficulties in broken and dysfunctional families, the obvious falling off of people in the pews and people that don't go to church. Let's call those three of the great fruits of the day. But those are not the roots. Those are not the causes. And on Winds of Change, and especially here on Brain Wrinkling Wednesdays, I tend to understand. Well, I recognize these bad fruits, though many don't. It doesn't seem like those three that I named, the rising crime rates, especially in big cities like here in our wonderful and beautiful Chicago. However, it's becoming more and more apparent throughout the United States that Chicago has a real super problem with violence and murders and all the rest. That is a problem. Everybody recognizes that as a problem. Not much controversy over pointing out that that's a problem. But the controversy comes in trying to understand it and get to the roots of the problem. So there's the violence, there's the dysfunctional families, the breakup of marriages and the difficulties of living a harmonious, civilized life within the family unit. And then there's the problem of the decreasing attendance at church. So those are three different areas, three different problems that are not too controversial in terms of pointing out that they're problems. But we'll get into the controversial issues because once you start trying to explain why and the roots of these things, that's where the rubber hits the road. And that's what we're going to do today. So as I said, if you do get my flock notes and you, I put the theme of today's show, the theme of, oh yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain.
Okay. Nick is really paying attention this morning. That's good. No, he always pays attention. He's a good sound man, so he's always. The topic of today's shows was, good Catholics avoid this mistake. I'm going to adapt it a little bit. These mistakes. good Catholics, or you could even substitute a bit. You could say, conservatives, conservative folk. And that increases the breadth and the width of the umbrella under which we sit right now. Good conservatives make these mistakes too, both Catholic, Protestants, and atheistic or agnostic kinds of conservatives, okay? So the three are these. And then I got some clips that I got to share with you because this is when listening, I like to enter into dialogue with people that I hear on the radio. I can't bring them into the studio very often, but I could bring their voices into the studio and give them credit where credit is due and take the dialogue just a little bit farther, just a little bit faster. And so let's see if I can get this. First mistake is thinking that thinking that the Catholic Church is built on a monarchy, that thinking that the Pope is a monarch, this little subtle mistake sneaks in and a many, many different places. And every time I hear it, I want to scream. Because the concept of a monarchy and the concept of the papacy are that they're not identical. They're not the same. And we gotta I want to dive into this. So you say, would you like an example? Oh yes, okay. We'll give you an example. Let's see if I can pull this up. This was from one of my this is from, let's see, we're going to have, here we go. This is from the Bill Bennett Show, and he was interviewing a guy by the name of Mark Thiessen. Mark Thiessen was a speechwriter for George W. Bush. He's a Catholic, and I'd say, you know, a good Catholic. And he was on Bill Bennett's podcast, so I'd like to tune in and see one of my heroes of the greater world around me. I think Bill Bennett is one of the wiser and finer voices out there. And I'm sure Mark Thiessen is one of the wiser and finer voices out there as well. But here in talking about the Catholic sex abuse problem, I find Mark Thiessen making this mistake. Let's listen here. Let's see if I can get this. If I can have
burned,
you know. But I mean, but if they can get to them, then they are available.
Well, the Vatican has them, so the Vatican has to release them. Unfortunately, I've been looking into this morning because there's no, as far as I can find, there's no Freedom of Information Act in the Vatican City State. There's one in Italy, there's one in the United States, but there's no formal process by which to demand the release of these documents because it's a monarchy. It's an unaccountable monarchy. So, you know, we have to put public pressure on.
Oh, let me.
It's an unaccountable monarchy, so you know we have to put public pressure on the Pope. And this one,
did you hear that?
Demand the release
Listen
of these documents because it's a monarchy.
About?
It's an unaccountable monarchy, so you know we have to put public pressure on the Pope. And this is why I think what people should do.
Okay, there's a good Catholic, a good conservative Catholic, making this mistake that I think is important. You could say, what's in a word, you know, or what's a. I hope he would agree with me if I tried to point out this. But that's a good little example. By calling, he's frustrated, of course, because, and I agree with his frustration. He's trying to say, there are a lot of documents that would reveal the terrible kind of, covering up of, the sex abusing priests, especially those of minors, but then also in the homosexual network, shall we say? And are there have been issues of priests abusing women? Yeah, we can't ignore that. I'm going to get to that, but it's a sad reality. It's a mortal sin, obviously, but there's a key difference in relationship to how the different kinds of sexual sins are dealt with. There all kinds of sexual sins are sins. Some are definitely mortal, some might be venial, but a lot of times sexual sins of almost any nature, and especially dealing with a priest, can be mortal. What does that mean? It means the person's soul is in danger, right? But it also means more than that. It means what and how are we going to deal with it. So, but this mistake that the papacy is thought of as a monarchy has to be eliminated. Why? primarily because when we live in modern America, right? Yes, we do. And when you say monarchy, we all get negative feelings running up and down our spine. Perhaps our hair stands up on the in the back of our heads. Monarchy is wrong. Monarchy is something we don't want to go back into. It's an evil part of the Middle Ages, and it's a we are super grateful that the American Revolution, as well as the French Revolution, did away with the monarchy. I was going to say the English Revolution, but the English Revolution really didn't do away with the monarchy, and that's an interesting topic in itself. Okay, so but so the key factor is hierarchy is can be and should be and should contain in it a good sense. Hierarchy is not the monarchy, because even doing away with a monarchy, you still have a hierarchy. And saying, like so many people do, that good thing we got away from the monarchy, now we've freed ourselves from hierarchy. That's where we make a huge mistake, because saying that you're getting rid of hierarchy is a little bit like saying, let's get rid of math, for instance. Now, I know some people love math, but a lot of people didn't like math when they had to study it in school. If I were to say, all of you out there who didn't like math in school, I declare that we are going to free ourselves of numbers and free ourselves of equations and free ourselves of math in general. Let us hear a round of applause for me, your liberator of math. And all those who didn't like math will certainly be glad and cheer me. There we go. Thank you very much. I am the I am your liberator, because you did not like math in school. But I'm here to tell you that you are now free from numbers. What's going to happen? Your life is going to unravel, and you're going to discover, wait a minute, numbers are all around me. You go to work, and you get your paycheck, and you look at the numbers on your check, and you say, wait a minute, there's something wrong here. There's injustice attached to these numbers. Or you are going to, you're contemplating with your lovely wife or your wonderful husband, how many children do we want to have? And you say, the number, it doesn't matter. Number doesn't matter. Well, in some sense, that's a very beautiful, virtuous thing. But, of course, we know that the number of children often does matter within the household, and it's a very important decision, and that's where our Catholic teaching on artificial birth control and natural family planning comes into play, blah, 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 okay? So anyways, gosh, it's getting late already. The hour is flying by. Nick wants me to take a little break here, so we're going to take a little break. I got to share yet another one of my ad heroes of the airwaves made the same mistake that I'm trying to point out to you, and I'll share that with you as soon as I come back. But I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
The Winds of Change.
The Winds of Change.
on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
Sometimes in life, we are confronted with the tyranny of choice. I know. Stop or go. Hot or cold. Up or down. This way or that way. You can contribute to Winds of Change, one way or the other. One way is to go to windsofchangeshow.com. Then click on Support Winds of Change Show in the upper right-hand corner of the page. The other is to go to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to make your donation, one way or the other.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Tom Coyce here, trying to wrinkle your brain, and I'm trying to point out some subtle mistakes that even my good friends and heroes make as we try to wrestle with the, especially the sex abuse issue that's going on today. I'm trying to focus on three. I was sharing this with a friend of mine, and he mentioned, he says, well, what's your topic today? And I'm going to say, I'm going to talk about three mistakes that good Catholics make. He said, only three? I had to respond, well, it's only an hour show. Maybe we can get 33 or 303, right? We all know that mistakes are easy to make, and especially like intellectual mistakes. Mistakes of reason, mistakes in philosophy and theology. That's what we're about here at the Winds of Change. So, anyways, the three mistakes I want to focus on are, number one, thinking that monarchy is the same as hierarchy, or thinking the papacy is a monarchy. Making that mistake, we do great disservice to the concept of hierarchy, which can and does and will always exist in any form of government. Hierarchy is a characteristic of being, shall we say. That I think that's probably the way St. Thomas Aquinas would say it. And to think that we can get away with the idea or the reality of a hierarchy because we got away with the idea of a monarchy is like thinking, by declaring we've gotten rid of math, we no longer have to deal with numbers. Okay, put that in your pipe and smoke it. The second mistake is thinking that we are promoting unity. You know, and everybody wants to promote unity, right? Unity in the family, unity in the parish and the church, unity within nations, unity between nations. Of course, unity is very, very important, and an aspect of what we sing when we sing the beautiful prayer of St. Francis, make me an instrument of peace, right? The peace, peace requires that unity. When there's deep conflict, we figure, oh, there's no peace, and we yearn for a kind of peace that exhibits unity. But here's the problem that I see many people making, even wonderful, good folk, and that is thinking that we are promoting unity while ignoring the quest for truth. Unity is a value, and truth is a value. They can and they should go together, but many a times people can be united around a lie or around a reality that is not a very deep truth. This is kind of the philosophical way of talking about identity politics, is what it often comes out to. We are united because we have the same skin color. We are united because we speak the same language. We are united because we like the same food. We are united because we have the same sexual orientation. Well, that's a little bit different, because that, as soon as you say sexual orientation, you get into the realm of sexuality. When you're in the realm of sexuality, you're in the realm of action, human action. Now that brings in moral issues. I was talking with one of my buddies, and I was saying, you know, the the problems that especially a city like Chicago has seen over the years, where racial differences between blacks and whites had separated neighborhoods. White people moved out of so many neighborhoods in the city of Chicago, leaving non-whites to now occupy the city. And I really think what we need to assess and we need to recognize, we need to swallow the hard pill, that it wasn't always just a fear of someone else's color. It was a frustration with a breakdown of moral lives. If there wasn't so much crime and or graffiti and the destruction of property, as it were, I'm quite sure that the white flight wouldn't have taken place, or if there would have been a strong, the trouble with the 60s and 70s when these things were going on, at least here in Chicago, was that as the black population grew, it was a perfect storm of sorts, because it was when the black population was being led by many of its black leaders to embrace a kind of ignore the moral principles, ignore the crime aspects of what's going on, and just call it racial bigotry, as it were. Certainly it caught on, and I'm not saying there isn't part of that, but there certainly can, and we certainly can admit that sometimes the greatest, most virtuous, most wonderful black family that moved next to you would scare some white people away. That's just sad to say, but true. However, if the moral relativism or the lesson that the black leaders were teaching many of their folks was not accompanied by a new spirit of moral relativism, or don't try to push moral principles within the family, within marriages, and all that. It certainly could have turned out different and certainly better. The third problem that I hope to get to today is when we ignore the difference, the difference within the conscience of a same-sex attracted person, especially a same-sex attracted priest, and a heterosexual priest, what is happening to the principles of conscience are different. And to say that there's no difference between a same-sex attracted priest and a non-same-sex attracted priest is to ignore and make is to belittle the idea that moral philosophies are important. I tend to bring up these themes because I studied that both in theology and philosophy, and there is an easy tendency to call this unimportant, or to label the battle here. I'm not ideological, which usually means it's not political. I'm going to get to that again here, but now I want to go back here to this was another one of my favorite podcasts. It's a guy by the name of William Federer. He's a Lutheran commentator, and he loves exploring history. He's a man after my own heart, and he does a very wonderful podcast. You learn a lot about history if you tune into William Federer. But here he makes the same mistake about identifying monarchy with hierarchy. You got to listen, and you got to listen closely. So let's see if I can get him to come up here. Let's see. This is William Federer.
And then they'd be coming down your street, and what are you going to do? You're going to gather together with some of the other neighbors and say, hey, there's this gang coming down, and let's work together. And so you would find somebody amongst you that's really good at knowing how to fight, maybe a veteran or something. And he's going to say, okay, we need to do this, that, and the other. And what happens is you end up having a good king. He's your guy. He's your leader. And the gang ends up having the worst brutal killer is the bad king. But you're back to kings. You've transitioned the form of government to the king, to the hierarchical structure.
Oh, did you hear that?
Transitioned the form of government to the king, to the hierarchical structure. And it, over the time, it turns into, if you're friends with this person.
Okay. Did you get that? He's, again, addressing a very important and a good topic as he's talking about how a society breaks down, especially perhaps in an inner city where one bad guy starts taking over and he becomes sort of the gang leader. And so the good people who are not necessarily in a gang, they just want to live their life unmolested or as simple as possible without getting involved too much, which is obviously what a lot of folks would like. But he's trying to describe how a bad person who rises and takes leadership position will spawn or bring about the bringing back of the bad idea of monarchy, of a king, because obviously somebody's going to try to organize the opposition to this bad guy, and the opposition to the bad guy will be a good guy, but he will tend to take power upon himself. He will tend to be the lone ruler, as it were. He'll become a king. And notice how he slipped in there so subtly. But in his mind, these two things are synonymous, monarchy and hierarchy. Again, he's a good example of what I'm trying to spell out, because I like the guy and I think he's got a lot of wise things to say, but he's making a dumb mistake here, because monarchy and hierarchy need to be two different ideas. Does monarchy is monarchy an example of a form of hierarchy? Yes, obviously it does. But are there forms of hierarchy that have nothing to do with monarchy? Yes, there are. As I said before the break, to think that we have done away with monarchy, we have done away with hierarchy, we are fooling ourselves. Take, for instance, just the example of the Supreme Court, right? The essence of the monarch is the decision stops here, or the buck stops here, right? As Roosevelt used to say. The decision, whatever we're talking about, stops here. This is where the final decision will be made. And that's obviously happens with a king, right? Hopefully with a lot of consultation with his advisors and all the rest. But part of the essence of the monarchy is that here is the final say so. But compare that to our Supreme Court. Is the Supreme Court looked upon as the kind of final say so of an issue? Absolutely it is. In especially here in the United States, when the Supreme Court speaks, the issue is settled. It's very similar to a formulation that we've used in Catholic catechisms oftentimes: when the Pope speaks, the issue is settled, right? Here, if I ask you, does this ring true in our American society today? When the Supreme Court speaks, the issue is settled. There's a whole lot of people that will say, well, yeah, witness Roe versus Wade, obviously, right? Obergefell, the declaration that two men can enter into marriage. the Supreme Court has spoken, and especially when there's a very difficult, controversial issue. And of course, there's 9 justices on the Supreme Court. So oftentimes, a decision, if it's not 7-2 or so, could be 5-4. Now, what does a 5-4 decision on the Supreme Court mean? It means that the decision was made by one person. Are we back to a monarchy? We're not necessarily back to a monarchy, but we're back to something very close to it, because this is the final word. This is where the decision is made. Are you following me? And that's why this little mistake. I've heard priests, I've heard bishops.
Wow.
I've heard so many people.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
That's it. And it's so easy to make this mistake. This wonderful commentator, Mark Thiessen, the great, a very good Catholic conservative who wrote speeches for President Bush, he made that mistake in his little discussion with Bill Bennett, as we heard just a little bit ago. Okay, there's a couple more clips, and then I want to point out a mistake that I sense one of my other great heroes, the wonderful late great Cardinal George, even he made this my second mistake. Okay, so let's stay tuned. I'm Father Tom Coyes, sitting in for Father Anthony Bush. You're listening to listener supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
On Saturday night, October 6th, from 7 until 9, at St. Stanislaus Kostka, Father Angel Espinoza will give a special talk on the urgent need to train your children in the 7 fields of true education. The talk will be in Spanish. Here's Cristina to tell you more.
El sábado 6 de octubre de 2018, en las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, la parroquia de San Estanislao Kostka y el Padre Ángel Espinoza los invitan a una conferencia sobre cómo les estamos enseñando a nuestros hijos la fe. ¿Estamos enseñando la fe popular y nada más por encima? ¿O realmente estamos enseñándoles a vivir la fe de una manera profunda, a practicarla diariamente en su vida? Regístrate y compra tu boleto de $30 en la página del web www.stanschurch.org. El cupo es limitado. Solo se venderán 5 boletos por persona. Para más información, favor de llamar a la parroquia al 773-278-2470. De nuevo, 773-278-2470. De nuevo, el sábado 6 de octubre del 2018, de las 7 de la tarde a las 9 de la noche, en la iglesia de San Estanislao Kostka, ubicada al 1327 Norte de la Noble en Chicago. Los esperamos.
For complete information and ticket purchase information, go to ststanschurch.org and click on the Events tab.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
How long has it been since you have been to church? Busy schedule? Work? Or just lost interest? To be Catholic is not just merely attending Mass as just another weekend activity to be checked off the to-do list. Participation in the sacred liturgy gives you the opportunity to be intimately connected to Christ through the Holy Eucharist. You can also cleanse yourself of sin through the sacrament of reconciliation as a baptized Catholic. Come before the iconic monstrance to be in Christ's presence in the sacred silence of the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy. St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is open 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. St. Stan's is just off the Kennedy, 2 blocks north of Division on Noble. Come back to Christ through the sacred liturgy and his gift of the sacraments at St. Stan's.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes here with you, wrinkling your brain, I hope, and I hope it's not hurting so much. But I'm trying to point out some subtle mistakes that some of my heroes and some very good folks I find are making. One is the identification of monarchy with hierarchy. The second is the thinking that we are promoting unity while we abandon the quest for truth, absolute truth. And the third is ignoring the difference between the way consciences act, the way consciences lead us to not only act, but to especially teach when it comes to the issue of priests and the sex abuse scandal going on today. So the second one, the second mistake, I find a bit evident in one of my great heroes, the late, great Cardinal George. Cardinal George gave a beautiful, except for this troubling little point that I'm going to point out, a very nice talk given at the Pandora's Pillbox Conference back in September of 1999. Pandora Pillbox is a group of people dedicated to trying to help people understand, Catholics and non-Catholics alike, why the Catholic Church's teaching on Humanae Vitae is so significant, so important, and so key, shall we say. Hence the little reference to pill, Pandora's pill. Pandora, meaning, remember the Greek story of don't open that box or else you let out a great diabolical presence that you can't put back in, etc. It's a good little name for the discovery of the contraceptive pill, as it were. Anyways, Cardinal George begins his talk by a beautiful meditation or explanation about how, well, I'll just start it out here, and I'm going to come back to this, but he starts out by saying, God is very unfair by our standards. And I think he would be leading up to trying to defend himself and the church from accusations of the church isn't fair. But he's saying God is very unfair by our standards because everything from God is a gift. It's all gift. And gifts are not equally shared. The parable of the laborers in the vineyard makes it clear that there is something that doesn't agree with our standard of equal pay for equal work. When the master of the vineyard calls people early in the morning to work and ends up giving them the same pay exactly as those who join in the midday or even at the end of the day and work very hard indeed. It seems that God is arbitrary. But he's not arbitrary. He's just extraordinarily generous. The other side of that story of God's generosity is in the parable that we just heard proclaimed today as the result of Peter's question to the Lord, how many times should I forgive someone who harms me? He was talking about real harm, not just a hurt feeling. There was a great discussion in the schools among the rabbis as to how often one is called, according to the law, to forgive. 3 or 4 times? It's a good thing that Peter asked these questions and he had enough trust in the Lord to put himself on the spot in this way. Jesus responded to Peter's questions with this parable showing that God's love is infinite. God's love is generous. God's love is a pure gift. And along with that love comes pardon. Okay, so I'm going to come back to that, but that's a beautiful opening that just to realize, once you see that everything God gives is a gift, he doesn't have to give anything to anybody, but he does. And we kind of want all the things that come to us from God to be the same as what God gives to everybody else, especially those around us, especially those close to us. And our sense is based on kind of workplace justice. They'll do the same work. We should get the same pay as oftentimes is brought up. But it's a little bit different when you're talking about mothers and fathers who obviously try to give to all their children the same, but let us sense that, or let us see oftentimes that a parent might sense a child to be a little handicapped in one way or another, even especially very handicapped. Let's say there is a child who has Down syndrome or a child who has a cleft foot or anything like that, that doesn't learn quite as quickly. There's attention deficit disorders, blah, blah, blah. So the parent is going to start to shower certain things on that child, which he doesn't, or she doesn't shower on the others. So, but the subtle mistake that I'm trying to point out, and this really very, very insightful for the why and how some maybe good bishops didn't always do what we now say we want them to do when it came to certain bad priests. I'll just put it this way. He roots it in this debate over artificial contraception, which I think is a, well, he's not, this talk is not really touching upon the sexual scandal. He certainly had to address that, and in many ways, he said so much as that the sexual scandal that kind of hit the fan back in the year 2002, kind of wore him down. Some people might even say he died of that great burden and that great cross, and I think there's a lot of truth to that. So, but he's trying to explain to the people who are very convinced of the truth of Humanae Vitae. He's trying to apologize for the church, especially for priests who don't talk about it much. And he, as a bishop, didn't talk about it much. And he says this, I ask forgiveness in the light of the gospel of today for the fearfulness of pastors who very often will not speak about this issue, namely the sinfulness of artificial contraception, sterilization for birth control purposes, okay? That's what this is about. Sometimes because they don't totally accept the teaching of the church, but more often than not because they are worried about the unity of the flock. Priests try very hard to keep people together. And here's where he's kind of preaching to the conservative Catholics. You have to understand that to be sure that your own conversations with them are not touched with any kind of self-righteousness which would destroy the world of gifts in which we live. I'll translate here a bit. Colonel George is talking to people who are pro-Humanae Vitae, understand the sinfulness of this. Yeah.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
And he's telling them, when you talk to priests who don't talk about these things, be careful not to approach them with a self-righteousness. I find that a little bit troubling, the way he puts it. I think I know what he's saying, but I don't know too many people. I run around in many circles of people who are faithful in regards to fidelity to Humanae Vitae. I find them to be very humble, and they're always trying to be very subtle and share it with the greatest concern, and oftentimes with their own conversion stories. I used to believe in artificial contraception, and now I live differently, etc. So anyways, I think Cardinal George is painting a little monster that doesn't exist when he says, although can it exist? Yes, I'm sure it can, and maybe he's seen it different times, of course. But he's saying the bishops and the priests are primarily concerned about unity, and therefore, in that very conservative role of trying to keep people together, sometimes we don't advance as quickly as we should. Here's where Cardinal George is explaining something to me, vis-a-vis, I didn't hear this talk when he was alive, of course, I just read it recently, but he's explaining something to me from heaven about one of the frustrations I had with him, although I loved him dearly. But one of the frustrations I had with him is that he didn't address the issues of right to life and dissent about Humanae Vitae, hardly at all. I can't say never, because he did do it in a few different talks to certain audiences, but very rarely brought it up in the general population. He's an example of the kind of pastor he's talking about when he says some of them didn't talk about it because they were, And because they didn't totally accept the teaching, or more often because they were worried about the unity of the flock. I'm sure Cardinal George fit into that second category. He was worried about the unity of the flock. If he talked about this, he knew that the issue was so divisive that it would cause schism. And I think that fear is pretty much realistic. Okay, so I got to come back here again, we're going to wrap this up somehow with the time we have left. I'm Father Tom Coyes. You're listening to listener-supported The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
Portions of the day's programming are reproduced by means of electrical transcriptions or tape recordings.
Get in touch with God.
Get in touch with God.
Turn your radio on.
Turn your radio on.
You've got your radio turned on to Winds of Change, where you can hear about your faith and hear about today's culture through the lens of Christ's teachings with Father Anthony Bush and others, Monday through Friday at noon on AM 750. Keep Winds of Change on by going to ststandschurch.org and click on the radio tab to donate. And Winds of Change offers thanks for your donation.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ and on the World Wide Web at windsofchangeshow.com.
St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, is taught by our highly educated and dedicated teachers. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent. Join the St. Stan's family. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org.
Hey, welcome back, everyone. Father Coyes with you. Hoping I'm wrinkling your brain a bit. We're going through some challenging times in our church with this very sad... The scandal.
You just wrinkled my brain, man.
The renewed fires of the sexual scandal within the clergy, and especially with the discovery that... Bishops and cardinals were involved in it not only in the participation of the wrong acts, but also the way they were dealt with. So that's the topic du jour, of course. And I'm trying to point out some issues that are very much related to it. You might not think they're related right offhand, but they must be, they should be connected to this. The thing about when you're getting closer to a deep truth is that many things start connecting, as it were. You embrace one thing and another thing that was cloudy now becomes clear. And just before the break, I was pointing out that one of the mistakes that very easy to make, even among some of my heroes and friends and admirable people who are in many ways much smarter than myself, but in this regard, I think I need to point out a mistake that is easily made, that that you think you're developing unity while you're ignoring the deep quest for truth. You know, a good example of someone who did say just what I'm saying was Bishop Morlino from the Diocese of Madison, Wisconsin, when he wrote his little letter in response to the Archbishop Vigano declaration, accusations, whatever we want to call them today. But Bishop Merlino put it very clearly in his letter that you can't develop unity while ignoring truth. And Cardinal George's point is well taken, but and it explains a lot in the sense of, okay, I get it, but doesn't solve the problem. What is it that we get? Yes, a lot of priests and even bishops and cardinals were more interested in unity than in getting to the truth of the matter, the moral issues that were part of the dividing of people. Remember earlier in the show, I was talking about white flight in Chicago and the division between blacks and whites. And I was trying to point out that the breakdown of moral lives was part of the problem. The crime issues forced people out just as much as someone's color. They exaggerated? Yeah, sure, they would have exaggerated because they were afraid. Did they have reason for being afraid? Yes, because too often what starts out as small grows bigger if it's not checked, and it wasn't being checked either internally or externally, okay? So, but this last little tidbit, we only got a little bit of time, but here's where Bill Bennett's guest, Mark Thiessen, explains how gay and straight doesn't really matter. And that's where I think we gotta, let's see if I can pull this up. Come on. There we go. Let's see, here it goes. He's talking like this again.
Of homosexuality in the church, the loosening up of
that's Bill Bennett.
Of views or doctrine on that, or the perceived loosening up.
Yeah, here's the way I look at it, is that the Catholic teaching is that we are all of us, homosexual, heterosexual, called to chastity except within the sacrament of marriage, period, right? And it doesn't matter whether you're gay or straight, we are all called to do that. If you are a bishop or a priest who is charged with teaching and upholding the Catholic faith, you cannot live a life in which you're violating the Sixth Commandment, period. It doesn't matter whether if you're doing it with women, it doesn't matter if you're doing it with men, you're called to a life of chastity. As we, the laity, all are, except within marriage. Now, if you don't want to live that way, you don't have to be a Catholic priest and you don't have to be a Catholic bishop. But if you are doing that, regardless of whether it's with men or with women, you do not belong with a Roman collar around your neck, period, full stop. Now, the reality is that in the case of seminarians, it's all men because...
Yeah, so you got that. He's obviously saying some very important things, which I completely agree with. It's a sin. It's a sin for a heterosexual person to do something outside of marriage, as well as homosexual. But it's not period, end of story. We've got to come back to this theme because the way the conscience is formed, the way the conscience acts, is how people teach. And of course, one of the aspects of the priest is a teacher, and teaching has been messed up. We got to uncover those bad conscience principles. Okay, I'm Father Tom Coyce. Thanks for listening. This is AM 750 WNDZ.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Can you see the winds have changed? We marvel and flatter such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.